This is a special edition of the RTI Press Pass powered by Rocky Top Insider. Here are your hosts, Jack Foster and Ryan Shumpert.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back into the Rocky Top Insider Press Pass Baseball Podcast here on this Thursday afternoon. I'm your host, Jack Foster, joined alongside Ryan Shumpert, and we're going to be talking a lot of Tennessee baseball today, of course, recapping what we've seen over the past week as it's been a obviously busy week. Tennessee had five games last week, and they've since played another midweeker, run-ruling Eastern Kentucky in seven innings, and you know Tennessee dominated Illinois pretty much for the majority of the weekend. Sunday was a tad interesting as they actually had to come from behind to win 8-3, but I mean, it was a stress-free 6-3 win on Friday night, and then an absolute, you know, annihilation on Saturday. Shades of Iona circa 2022 with a 24-1 win over the Fighting Illini then.
But doing well. Recap glad all that to, we're getting into good stuff now. SEC play rolling, and you've probably heard me give this complaint, but I'll give my complaint to the people as a whole that, you know, usually the basketball schedule has ruined everything this year. Or not ruined, but screwed everything up. Because everything in the basketball has been pushed back a week. So usually it's, you know, first weekend of the NCAA tournament overlaps with the first weekend of SEC baseball. And so it's like you miss a weekend, maybe two weekends. But now this year, if everything moved up or everything moved back for basketball, I'm worried I'm going to miss a lot of this baseball stuff covering basketball. But that's the nature of it. Luckily, the times this week, with Tennessee basketball being in an early slot, they don't overlap a ton. So hopefully we'll be able to watch a lot of the games this week, at least on Friday and Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm going to assume you probably miss, what, three SEC series? Because SEC turning, I think they make it out of the first weekend, obviously.
You never know, but you would think
maybe
so.
Not
you
obviously, would think but that's what I think. And then, yeah. And then the second weekend, let's, you know, we'll see if they win both or win one, you know, like they did last year. So all interesting. But yeah, Tennessee gets going against Alabama this weekend down in Tuscaloosa. We're going to look at Alabama a little bit more later in the podcast and, you know, talk about that's going to be a challenging series for Tennessee for sure to ride out of the gate. But Ryan, I know it's kind of a broad question here, but with the last, you know, handful of games, half a dozen games you've watched over the past week, what's kind of been your biggest takeaway for this team?
AJ Causey has somewhat locked down at least one of the weekend starter spots, at least for the time being. He's asserted himself as the third guy entering a conference play, and obviously Chase Burns lost it last year, and so it's capable for anybody to lose their spot, but it feels like Tennessee has some stability there, and it feels like it's going to be AJ Causey with his as good as he was for two straight starts now, doing it at least against a little bit better competition. Not that Illinois, you know, everybody Tennessee plays in SEC play will be better than Illinois, but Illinois is certainly better than Bowling Green. And then kind of on the reverse side of it, just I think we already knew that Nate Snead was going to be one of the best bullpen arms for Tennessee and be one of the top guys, but I think we've kind of had it punched in or really asserted that Tennessee wants to use him in the bullpen. The fact that they started Aaron Combs as kind of an opener on Sunday, they went Combs to Snead just like they did in that Tuesday game against Kansas State. To me, that kind of said we want to keep this guy in the bullpen because Combs, you know, Combs is an important piece to this bullpen and to this pitching staff. But I never thought it was a very serious possibility that he was going to be a starter. So for them to use him as an opener and then to Snead, it feels like Snead's the top guy in the bullpen. They really like him in that role, and they're going to be able to maybe move him around and use him on different days and also have that good pitcher that can go four or five innings for you if need be out of the bullpen, which feels like has kind of been a staple of these Tony Vitello, Frank Anderson pitching staffs.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, the high velo out of the pen, that's such a weapon. And like you said, the fact he can, you know, go for a long time, those extended relief outings will be so crucial. Tennessee ended up having two of those guys kind of last year with Burns and Halvey. Of course, Burns much more dynamic than Seth Halverson and was a much, you know, more significant piece to the bullpen for Tennessee. But, you know, Snead is kind of in the middle of those two, I would say, based off how he pitches. And yeah, he's going to be that guy for Tennessee. And, you know, if you just go back, last year and you look at the big games Tennessee won, almost always it is because they had a big bullpen, you know, performance out of somebody. Well, Burns most of the time in those huge games, but sometimes Seth Halverson, sometimes Camden Sewell in the past couple of seasons. So yeah, it's really important. I'm not breaking any news here, but you know, Nate Snead is going to be a very, very significant piece to not only this pitching staff, but this Tennessee team
as
a whole. And I really like that role.
You mentioned it too with the kind of the power arm. Tennessee doesn't really have a whole lot of that this year in their bullpen, which I think gives them an element that's important to have and to kind of give different looks to different teams or to opponents. And I think when you talk about Snead's specific outing on Sunday against Illinois, which he came in and pitched, what, the final six innings, I believe, the walks has been the question mark. That's been the shaky part with him. And he ends up walking two guys in the ninth inning. But before the ninth inning, he didn't have a single walk. And he talks after the game with us about some of the things he's worked on mechanically with Frank Anderson that he feels like is really paying off for him. So that's huge. And yeah, I mean, it's most years. I mean, Tennessee's rotation was so good each of the last 2 years that you could – Tennessee just had so much pitching depth. But it feels like you even go back to the 21 team with the way they used – Sean Hundley and Will Heflin as a starter. It almost feels like a lot of times, unless Tennessee just has an abundance of really good pitchers, it almost feels like Vitello and Frank Anderson like to keep one of their best three arms in the bullpen to be able to do what Hundley did a lot of times, which was pitch the final inning or two on a Friday and turn around and give you more on Sunday if you need it, or just if the wheels fall off for anybody. You're still in the game when you have a guy like Nate Snead that can go out there and do what he did against Illinois and throwing six innings, or do what he's done a number of times this year, throwing four or five innings.
Yeah, and you certainly watched more offseason ball than I did. And, you know, it was kind of a storyline entering the season where, yeah, Nate Snead, we all expected him to be a big part of the bullpen, but, you know, he had kind of struggled a little bit in the offseason and leading up to the start of the season. So for him and, you know, even in his first outing, he was a little shaky there at the beginning. Thought maybe he got a little lucky to not give up as many runs as maybe he would have. It was a lot of hard hit fly balls, you know, to the outfield is what I'm saying. And he had, what, five, six walks. So, you know, not the best first outing, but since he's been really, really dominant, do you think that, like, this is the best Nate Snead has been from all you've seen dating back to the fall?
Yeah, no, I would say
to,
so.
You know, leading up this year.
And he did have a rough fall. He was better in the build-up in the preseason. But, yeah, I would say what we've seen from him, really the last two outings, because you talk about the last two outings being against a Big Ten team in Illinois and a Big 12 team in Kansas State that's, you know, going to have a chance to make the NCAA tournament. I think what he's done in those two outings has been most impressive and the most dominant we've seen him. And even the Illinois game, like, it didn't even feel like his velo was at its best. Like, he probably hit 100 maybe a couple times in that first inning, but by the end of that outing, he was much more in the mid-90s. And for him to still be working through it and getting outs, I thought was, you know, impressive from a pitchability standpoint, which has kind of always been one of my questions about Snead.
Shift gears to A.J. Causey. He started the past two Friday nights as A.J. Russell has dealt with some soreness. We'll see if he's ready to go this weekend. All indications seem like he probably will be, but maybe he doesn't start Friday night. Maybe it's a different day, or maybe he doesn't start at all but just appears out of the bullpen one time. We'll see. But A.J. Causey has been the Friday night guy the past 2 weeks, and he has just been flat-out incredible. Obviously not going to blow you away with his speed, but he has been striking dudes out left and right. I think he's totaled 21 strikeouts in his two starts. Ryan, you kind of mentioned it at the top of this conversation, but it feels like A.J. Causey has locked down a starting job on the weekend. I mean,
no, I don't. Not entering SEC play. I don't see any scenario where he doesn't start this weekend. I think you're right. The question becomes, when does he start? And that becomes interesting with what Tony Vitello said about A.J. Russell following the win over Eastern Kentucky on Tuesday, which was, you know, he's available, he's thrown a bullpen, we could have used him tonight if we wanted to, but it still very much had, we're going to play it cautious, we're going to play it conservative. So even if Russell does start a game this weekend, how much does he throw? Does he even get up to 75 pitches? And even 75 pitches is only going to get you four or five innings most likely. So to me, it becomes curious of, you almost feel like maybe you keep Causey, even if you're going to start Russell, you almost maybe keep Causey in that Friday night role just because he'll have an ability to maybe get deeper into the game. But one way or another, Friday or Sunday, Causey's going to be a weekend starter for Tennessee.
So you think maybe they could use Russell for a couple innings Friday and then
They could. I think Causey will be in the start. You know, we'll start though on Sunday. I would almost wonder maybe if it'd be more likely to be the opposite of that. If Causey pitches and maybe you have Russell throw two innings out of the bullpen or something like that. Again, it's just going to be whatever they feel like his pitch count is at. Because if it's, you know, if it's even 50 plus, you probably start him sometime and just use him as an opener. But I guess if you have to use him that way, my question would it make more sense to use him on Sunday and maybe have Nate Snead come in after him as opposed to using him on Friday and having to burn a lot of Snead innings or patch it together out of the bullpen so early in the weekend? Yeah,
exactly. Kind of use Russell as the Combs this week, right? That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I think that would be more likely. And I know we've talked about this a little bit off the air, but as far as the day Causey goes, you know, do you think maybe that, you know, baseball is such a game where you get into routines and you get comfortable and you just, you know, find a rhythm. Okay, it feels like Causey has found a rhythm on Friday nights and Tennessee has found a rhythm with Causey on Friday nights. I know it's a smaller sample size, but do you think there's a chance that Causey could just continue starting on Fridays and maybe they move Russell to Saturday and Beam back to Sunday or Russell to Sunday, something like that? But I know from our previous discussions, you feel like Russell is.
Yeah, I mean, you said it there. I mean, I feel like Russell on Friday night just still makes the most sense because what he has from a high end talent and kind of setting the tone for the weekend standpoint. But to your point, you know, of it being a continuity in a game of having rhythm and having feel. And us just talking about, you know, if AJ Russell has a pitch count on this weekend, maybe you don't throw him on Friday. If you get another good Causey Friday night start, like the more he pitches well on Friday night, yeah, the more, and he does it against an SEC competition, against better competition in these big moments. It does to me, kind of to your point, which has kind of been your point all along. Why mess with it? So, yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely something that's possible and will probably be something worth talking about after the weekend when we see kind of how Tennessee handles everything.
Regardless, all of this is a very good thing for Tennessee. They've found their third guy. Xander Seacrest certainly wasn't that. I mean, he's looked good in the midweeks, but, you know, he struggled with those weekend starts. I think Aaron Combs is not a guy you want to start. You know, on Sundays, he's more of a bullpen guy. They want to keep Nate Snead in the bullpen. So the fact that Tennessee has found their third guy is the biggest win of the season so far. It's the most encouraging thing for sure. Ryan, any bullpen arms you want to hit on here? I know Marcus, you know, these starters have done so well these past couple weeks that not a whole lot of guys have had innings. I think probably one of the most important notes is that Chris Stamos, who suffered an injury against High Point, did return in the midweek over Eastern Kentucky. That was his first action. So he's back, you know, in the fold for Tennessee. And we know he's going to get some important bullpen innings this season. One of their top left-handed arms. Andrew Binkie is another name we should focus on too. I feel like that's where I'll start here. You know, lefty who is in a second season and has, you know, paid his dues, waited his time, if you will. And now he's one of the top bullpen arms for Tennessee.
I wrote about it after the game on Friday night when he pitched two scoreless innings, struck out three against Illinois. To me, it just feels like I've been saying a lot. I think I've said it on here that I feel like he's really talented. He's going to be a big part of Tennessee's bullpen moving or Tennessee's pitching plans moving forward. Wasn't quite sure what his role would look like this year because Tennessee just has so many left-handed arms out of the bullpen. You know, I think I've seen enough from him in the pre-conference that I'm going past that, and I think he's going to have a very real role in this bullpen and a consistent role in this bullpen. Exactly what that looks like, I'm not completely sure, but he's just been too good. Nine innings pitched in six outings this year. He's been able to go two innings in the Kansas State and the Illinois outing. He's just given up two earned runs, 12 strikeouts, and maybe the thing that's biggest to me, he's got two walks, all of them in his worst outing of the year when he got two outs against High Point, two walks. I think at times this pitching staff's going to drive Frank Anderson a little crazy with the walks just from not that it's super out of the normal for college baseball as a whole, but it's out of the normal for a Frank Anderson and a Tennessee pitching staff. And Beanke's just ability to throw strikes and get guys out that way, I think, is going to almost become a security blanket for Anderson in Tennessee's bullpen. So, like I said, I think Beanke's going to have a big role. And to me, he's been one of the most impressive guys of the, you know, out of the bullpen for Tennessee, probably pitchers as a whole, really, for Tennessee at this point in the season.
Yeah, and it's really important, too, because we talked about the, you know, the amount of left-handed arms Tennessee had on their staff. Well, a lot of those are freshmen, with the top two being Matthew Dallas and Derek Schaefer, and then we talked about Xander Seacrest. And, you know, those guys just really haven't impressed so far this season. I know Seacrest is a different scenario there, but specifically the freshmen, it really feels like they haven't taken the bull by the horns at all. And, you know, they've struggled with command, specifically Dallas has a lot, but, you know, they've just been a little shaky. So the fact that Beanke has been
is
really
Stamos
important.
Is going to be a big part of that. You know, Kirby Cannell is going to have a role, but it feels like Beanke's the ability to stretch him out is certainly more at this point. So you're right. The freshmen have been shaky, which is why AJ Causey being so good in the as a starter is so important, because those are Schaefer, who's obviously right-handed, but Schaefer and Dallas were guys we pointed to of thinking they could be potential weekend starters, maybe not by SEC play, but by the end of the year, and not to say that they can't find a rhythm in SEC play, but they certainly are not in it right now. So that makes what Beanke is doing more important, and certainly it kind of opens up a path to him having a solidified weekend role, weekend in, weekend out.
All right, Ryan, let's move on to the offense, unless you had any other pitching notes from what you've seen of the past handful of games. All right, let's move right along. Tennessee's offense has rolled right along, and it is dominating pitching staffs left and right. I mean, we're talking, you know, everyone wants to compare teams to the 2022 team. I'm not doing that, but some of the performances they've had since we've last podcasted have given you flashbacks to 2 years ago. I'm talking the 15-5 Kansas State drubbing that was just homer after homer after homer on a midweek against a really good team. You didn't really see that a lot last year. And then, like I said earlier, the 24-1 annihilation of Illinois was just absurd. And the amount of offense they had in that game, it's just unfathomable. So this offense is super deep. 14-15 guys that are really, really dangerous. And, you know, the top of this lineup just continues to rake Ryan. Blake Burke, he's been terrorizing these teams. Of course, he's that situation where he did it last year and then was underwhelming in SEC play. We'll see if he can continue that. But Kavaris Tears has been one of Tennessee's best bats this season, not just power hitting, but all hitting. I mean, he's just really good right now. And Christian Moore, of course, I'm not breaking any news there, but what's your take on this just loaded offense Tennessee has displayed so far this season? Has it exceeded what your expectations were?
I feel like it's been about what my expectations were. And maybe in some ways exceeded them, but some of that is just, again, it's hard to say when you're playing a lot of teams that aren't really good and don't have really good pitching staffs. But no, I mean, it's been really good. I think my biggest takeaway, or the thing that to me that's most positive, is just how good both Kavaris Tears and Dylan Dreiling have been. I mean, those felt like the two guys that were, we've seen them before. They had, you know, some DH roles last year, and they were Tennessee's best pinch hit bats last year, and they got some work in midweeks, and they were good last year. But those were the two guys that were stepping up into bigger roles, and you thought they were going to be good. But again, it's kind of like the SEC thing. You just never know for sure until they get out there. And both of them have been great. I mean, the way Tears has been able to hit foul pole to foul pole has been really encouraging. I think that shows just his growth as a hitter since his freshman year, when it was almost all poolside power. Him leading the team in batting average is not something I would have projected or predicted. And then Dylan Dreiling has also just been really good. So both those guys, I think, has probably been most encouraging. And then, I'll say, you mentioned Blake Burke too. And there's, like I said in our preview, there's just always going to be an element of need to see it translate fully to SEC play. But, you know, it does feel different to me than last year. And kind of the same way, it just feels like he's been so consistent, making hard contact, being able to go opposite field a lot more. And it just hasn't been home runs. It felt like last year, it was just he had a ton of home runs. For him to have 11 doubles this year. He leads Tennessee. Yeah, I mean, he leads Tennessee with seven extra base hits, 17 extra base hits by a pretty good margin. So he's just been, again, we'll see what he does in SEC play. But I don't think you could have crafted, envisioned, drawn up a much better non-conference slate from him when you talk about seeing multiple different things. And then also the strikeout numbers have, you know, haven't been too high either.
Yeah, I believe, I know entering Tuesday, of course, Blake Burke was suspended for Tuesday's game after getting ejected on Sunday, but entering Tuesday's game, at least, he was leading the SEC in doubles. So, you know, we're talking about one of the best hitters in an SEC so far this season in Blake Burke, and Tennessee, of course, would have a lot of those guys towards the top, but with Kavars Tears. And I'm glad you mentioned Dylan Dreiling, because it felt like he's kind of flown under the radar a little bit. I mean, when you have Billy Amick hitting nine homers, and, you know, Blake Burke's a fan favorite and what he can do, Simo at the top of the lineup. I mean, heck, Dean Curley hitting three homers in one game, that's going to get everybody excited for him, right? So it does feel like Dreiling has flown under the radar a little bit, hasn't had these just massive, massive games people are talking about. But then you look and he's hitting 377, already got six homers on the year. He's going to be a really good player for Tennessee. And, you know, with Tony Vitello having experimented with the outfield a couple of times early
I was just looking at
it feels
numbers.
Like Dreiling's an everyday guy.
Surprising to me that he's started 16 times, 16 of 18 games. It almost feels like he's been left out of the lineup a few more times, which is almost what I was going to kind of point to part of the reason he's flown under the radar. But yeah, no, he's firmly grabbed that. And he was good the opening weekend in Texas. Felt like it wasn't like he wasn't good when he came back, but just from the how good everybody else was against some of the, you know, in that UAlbany series, he wasn't quite as dominant in Tennessee. Okay. Again, trying to figure out all their options in the outfield. He's been out of the lineup two games, but it feels like he's been better and better as we've gotten closer to SEC play, and has been really impressive and has locked up that left field job for sure.
Hunter Ensley, who had a slow start to the season, has rebounded a little bit here in the last couple of games, and he's hitting 271 now on the season. That's a fine number for an 8 or 9 hole hitter that is really good defensively. You know, it kind of looked like, and it still may occur, where Hunter Ensley is not an everyday guy in the outfield, and that they'll play KT at center sometimes, and then maybe Bargo or Villeneuve at a corner outfield spot, or Reese Chapman, who we saw start twice in the Illinois series. He's also firmly in the mix. But, you know, do you kind of think that Hunter Ensley is maybe turning a little bit of a corner here over the past couple of games, finding some momentum or some rhythm?
It does feel that way a little
heading
bit.
Into SEC
and
play.
To me, it feels a little bit like it's almost been slow and steady. Like, I think you could easily just point to the two home runs in his last two games, first two home runs of the season, and be like, all right, these last two games. To me, it feels like the result or the process had been better than the results for a little bit. I mean, certainly he struggled early in the year. I felt like he had a stretch of games where he was making harder contact and just not getting a ton of results out of it and was doing some good things. And like I said, the results weren't necessarily following. And now it feels like you're finally starting to see those results. So, it's not shocking because this is a guy that hit over 300 in SEC play last year. We've seen him do it against good competition. And now obviously he'll have less of a target on his back too, hitting at the back of Tennessee's lineup this year. I think you definitely have to feel Hunter Ensley's done a lot more to solidify himself as a pretty consistent weekend starter. Maybe he's not out there one game every couple weekends or something like that, because Tennessee has so many options and so much depth and they're trying to piece everything together. But to me, if there was any doubt that his grip on that job was loosening, to me, I feel like he's kind of grabbed it, hold of it again, and certainly is starting to hit better and better at the right time of the year.
Yeah, I suppose one of my biggest takeaways of the last couple of games is that after all this rotation in the outfield and all these different, you know, lineups Tony Vitello was using so far this season, it does seem like that when push comes to shove and it's Friday night SEC opener, you're trotting out your best guys, that the outfield is going to be the exact same it was on opening day. Kavars Tears in right,
No, you're right. I feel the same way.
Dylan Trouting in left.
I think the debate comes more of, you know, who's the DH? And is it Robin Villeneuve? Is it Dalton Bargo? Both those guys have been really good. Both those guys have been impressive. Robin's cooled off a little bit from his just insane start to the season. But even with that, he's still hitting 361, three homers, 15 RBIs. So all those guys have been good. Or both those guys have been good. And that's kind of the thing that I think will be interesting to see how Tennessee handles that.
Yeah, I think they'll rotate. I feel like it's, you know, one, you have the luxury of one being a righty, one being a lefty. So I just think they'll continue to rotate. And another position that I think will continue to rotate, and maybe this is a surprise from, you know, what we thought before the season, but that's catcher. I think Kyle Stark has improved at the plate. He's not, you know, blown anybody away. And it's easy to say this coming off a grand slam he had on Tuesday against Eastern Kentucky, but he does look better at the plate. He didn't really have a pulse at the plate at the end of last year. I mean, let's, you know, say how it was. That's really what it was. So he does look better. We know what he brings to the table defensively. I do think Cal Stark has earned himself at least one weekend start.
No, I completely agree.
Behind the plate. What do you think?
I should say, yes, I completely agree. And to me, the big part of it's like, if you had Cannon Peebles on last year's team, maybe not, because the offense wasn't that good and you just needed to get Cannon Peebles bat in there at all times. This offense is really good and it's really deep. I think you can very much afford to have Cal Stark in there starting one game in the weekend. And he has been really, really, I mean, I thought he was good, way better defensively catching wise than what Tennessee had, you know, kind of leading up to it at the end of last season. It feels like he's even taken another step forward, and he's just been really good there, has a really good working relationship with Tennessee's pitching staff, and it's just playing at a really high level defensively. And you're right, he's been better offensively. Obviously, that gets a lot harder against SEC competition, because he was pretty good, or solid, at least in the non-conference last year, too, hitting. But yeah, I think if for the time being, for as we enter SEC play, he's definitely going to be a guy that I would be surprised if he's not starting at least one game in the weekend.
And plus, it's not like Peebles is blowing anybody away with his bat right now. I do think the numbers will, you know, get better as the season goes along. And he had a couple of games where he really showed you what he's capable of, but it hasn't been too consistent. He certainly had a slow start, you know, only hitting barely above 300 right now. And we know how dangerous he is, though. So, you know, Peebles, it'll probably come. But from what we've seen so far, it's not like he just has to be in the lineup every day. You know, I do think that even when Cal Stark starts at catcher, I don't think Peebles is going to be the DH. I still think Villeneuve or Bargo.
Yeah,
will
this
be
weekend,
that
at
DH
least I agree. I mean, obviously, like
time.
You said, that can change. He can get it going and force their hand. And for Tennessee's batters that have 30 at bats this season, Peebles is the second lowest batting average. Now, granted, it's 304, but second lowest batting average, above only Hunter Ensley. And he's the only guy in Tennessee's top, you know, 11 or 12, doesn't have a home run yet this season. Does have five doubles, but we haven't seen the long ball power yet.
Which is crazy. I mean, considering the amount of 49 home runs as a team so far. So it's wild. He doesn't have one. But yeah, I can't remember quite how many players you said would have 10 home runs. Was it eight? You were seven, and then I made you go eight.
I can't remember
the season.
If it was seven, you made me go eight, or six, and you made me
you
go
remember?
Seven. It was one of the two.
Either way, we have, there's four players with six right now. Billy Amick's going to get there in flying colors, and he has nine already. So that's five. And then Kavaris Tears has five. So, and I think he'll get to 10 easily. So that's six already in the
back. Yeah, and it,
so far.
And can,
from what it looks like.
If yeah, it's eight, I feel like Peebles is the close one that's really, it's going to be tough. I mean, I'm sure he's going to end up hitting a number of home runs, but I think it's going to be tough for him to get 10. And then can either Robin, who's at three, or Dalton, who's at two, get to 10 without, you know, rotating starts? I think that'll be hard too. So I think they'll have a number, probably six or seven get it, and then a number of guys kind of flirting in that ballpark.
Well, Well, there you have it. Ryan, I saw your tweet yesterday when the Titans signed Calvin Ridley to 4 years, 92 mil, that you were sick. Were you sick with happiness? Were you just so
I was
ecstatic you couldn't handle it?
I'm coming around. I mean, I'm coming around. Signed, but I was sick with sickness.
Calvin Ridley.
As you know, I already thought Calvin Ridley was a very overrated player. But I don't know. I've come around to the we're not any good, so we're gonna have to overpay for anybody. And let's just give Levis as many options as weapons as possible and figure out what we got in him and make it where there's no excuses if he's bad that they don't have enough around him. Give him everything that you can to figure out whether he's the guy.
Well, I'll say this. Ridley dropped a lot of touchdowns last year. Or really just couldn't get his second foot in. But I do think he's really talented. And it's definitely an overpay. But
yeah,
Julian Hopkins is dangerous. And it's going to be fun. Like, you can't deny. Tony Pollard, Tajay Spears, those two wideouts. You know Levis will just sling it. He doesn't care. So it's going to be a fun product. Especially if they can get Alton
and
decent O-line.
Certainly compared to how unbelievably unfun the Titans offense has been the last couple years. It should be a lot more enjoyable, and hopefully, you know, with as much cap space as the Titans have right now, I'm hoping that they'll be able to structure it where they can get out of the deal after 2 years. You know, at least have that option, which would make me feel a lot better about it too, because the potential long-term investment into a dude that is 29 was also kind of one of my big concerns.
Yeah, the age was not ideal. If he was 26, it'd look a lot better. But he's not. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Rocky Top Insider Tennessee Baseball Press Pass podcast. Oh, yeah. My bad. Yes, Tennessee plays Alabama.
Alabama, first-year coach Rob Vaughn from Maryland. Pretty good so far this year. I think they're 14 in D1 baseball's rankings right now. Yeah, 14 in D1 baseball's rankings right now. 15-2. I'd say they've had a pretty similar schedule to Tennessee. Probably a little bit easier in the fact that they played one really kind of challenging weekend. They played out in Frisco. They beat Indiana, who was about the best team in the Big Ten, at least it has been early this season. They beat Arizona, and they lost to Dallas Baptist. And then they went to a place that Tennessee baseball is very familiar of earlier this week, to Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and Pete Taylor Park, where they lost 7-9 to Southern Miss. So it's a offense that's been really solid to this point in the season. A handful of kind of familiar faces. Bryce Eblin's one of their best bats. TJ McCants is one of their best bats. Guys that we've seen for Alabama in the last couple of years. And then a couple of new guys too. Gage Miller has really been one of the best hitters in the SEC so far this season. He's hitting .478 with 8 home runs, 13 extra base hits, and 24 RBIs. Those are nearly Billy Amick type numbers with the power and a little bit better batting average. And then from the weekend pitching staff standpoint, Ben Hess, right-handed pitcher, has been their Friday night guy all year. He has a 2.65 ERA, 0.94 whip has probably been most important. Kind of the common theme with all these guys, which is somewhat similar to Tennessee, none of them have thrown a ton of innings. Even Hess, who started all 4 weekends, he's thrown just 17 innings. And then the other guy is Greg Ferrone, who left-handed pitcher, big guy, 6'6". They've kind of been figuring out some of their weekend stuff as a whole. He has had 5 appearances, 4 starts. Now, the first start was a midweek game, but he started the last 3 weekends for Alabama. 1.72 ERA, just 15 innings, kind of furthering that point I made a second ago about none of these guys have gone super deep. He went 5 innings against the Lipscomb last week. That was his longest outing of the season, and went 4 innings in that loss to Dallas Baptist. And I guess the thing that they're still trying to figure out, the third starter, they've used a bunch of different guys, but the thing that maybe stands out, or just to keep a note of, is they've gone Hess on Fridays and Greg Ferrone on Sundays. So it's been the Saturday spot that they've been kind of alternating around guys with. So they've kind of bookended their weekend with guys they feel pretty confident in. And then they've really used a different pitcher just about every weekend. And it's kind of been largely an opener role for how they've handled that third weekend spot in game 2 of these weekend series.
So they got some arms, no question, Hess leading the pack, but it does feel like Alabama's, you know, the troubles they'll present to Tennessee is at the plate offensively.
Yeah, it has. And has been it's kind of the same thing really we said good. About Tennessee. Some of it's a little hard to tell this early in the season just with competition, but seven guys in the lineup. Yeah, they did. And
I mean, they blasted Indiana.
Offense was good in the loss to Southern Miss. Their offense was good in the loss to Dallas Baptist. Like, their offense has been consistent. Seven guys hitting over 300. It's a deep lineup. Probably not quite the same depth from a power standpoint that Tennessee has, but even then, a number of guys, let's see, they got Miller has 8 home runs. McCants, who I mentioned, has 6. And then 1, 2, 3, 4 guys with 4 home runs. So a number of guys that at least have power capabilities. And I think it's an offense that's good, but that's the strength of the team is the offense. But that's SEC baseball for you. Most of these weekends, if you're playing someone in the top 25, they probably have a really good offense. So it'll be a good challenge for Tennessee's pitching staff this weekend for sure. Yes.
And especially since it's on the road. And we know what happened last year when Tennessee opened SEC play on the road. I guess what about Missouri? And Alabama's better than Missouri
probably
was, but I think Tennessee's
a
whole lot better than Tennessee
this
was
too,
at this point
was
last year. Yeah, a little warmer, a little better. Better conditions for sure, but it'll be a highly intriguing series.
Yeah, Saturday.
See, are
Sunday
any of those
both,
games televised?
Or on
do you
SEC
know?
Network. I believe it's 8 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night and 2 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday.
Yep.
7 p.m. Saturday. Eastern time on Friday night, SEC Network Plus streaming for that game.
Well, there you go. If you can't watch a game, you can always follow along with Rocky Top Insider's live update thread on RockyTopInsider.com. Ryan and I will be bringing you guys baseball coverage throughout the weekend, and you can also follow along with Ryan. He's at RShump00 on Twitter and at Rick Butler on Twitter, as they'll be manning or holding down the fort, I should say, in Ryan's hometown of Nashville this weekend for SEC tournament basketball. How about those first couple of games? A little bit interesting. Missouri almost taking down Georgia.
Yeah, that game was super exciting.
The Arkansas game was a thriller.
Yeah, you probably were not too locked into DePaul. Villanova was finishing right at the same time as Missouri, Georgia, and DePaul is probably the worst team in all of Big Six. They've won 3 games this season. And both Missouri and DePaul at like the exact same time lost those 2 games in just like hilariously bad fashion. And it's just like, okay, here's a reminder of how these teams have not won a single conference game all year, as they've just blown this game in very funny fashion. So that was, no, you're right. Good games. And it was kind of funny to watch those two teams happen side by side.
Well, it should be fun times in Nashville, and as I said, RTL will be bringing you guys coverage on everything Tennessee sports this weekend. Ryan, I'll catch you after the series. We'll be podcasting next week talking baseball. So until then, I'll see you. Have a good time in Nashville, and everybody, have a great weekend.